listening to KRBD Ketchikan and Reading the Classics. I'm Rebecca, your host for this evening. I'm one of several Ketchikan Public Library staffers who joined you on Tuesday evenings to share this time of reading some of our favorite stories. And typically, we get our stories out of the public domain to ensure that we 100% have permission to share these stories with you. And tonight we're in for a treat with some more recent stories. They are some children's stories, and we received special permission from Alaska Northwest Books, along with many other libraries, to read a few of their books aloud, either on social media or Glorious Public Radio. So we're able to do that for 2021. So I'm going to be sharing two of their books this evening. Both of them have to do with springtime, which of course is the time that we're in right now. Isn't that wonderful? I know that we're all so glad to see it. So I'm going to start out with a book called Chia and the Fox Man, an Alaskan Dainainan fable, retold by Barbara J. Atwater and Ethan J. Atwater, and it's illustrated by Mindy Dwyer. And if her name sounds familiar, it's because she is the author-illustrator of one of my favorites, and it's The Salmon Princess, which is this lyrical, magical retelling of the Cinderella story, but she's the illustrator of this book. So I would really encourage you to stop by the Ketchikan Public Library and pick up both of these wonderful children's books. But let's get right to it. This is Chia and the Fox Man, an Alaskan Dainainan fable. My name is Chia. I am an orphan. My parents died when I was young, but I still remember Sukdu time in the evenings. The stories they told taught me lessons about life, about how to behave and do what is right. Well, one day I learned about that, how sometimes it can be hard to do the right thing. I will tell you my Sukdu. With no family to care for me, I went to live in the kunk'a of a rich man in our village. Nestled into a hillside above a lake, our village looked safe and snug, but things were not good there. Even though it was early spring, winter lingered. Our hunters went out every day, but returned with nothing. We ice fished, but the hooks came up empty. Our food caches and cellars were bare. And so, the ush'in, I was hungry. Even with my hunger, I had chores to do. I carried firewood to keep us warm. I hauled water from the lake in birch bark buckets. I fed the dogs a salmon bone with bits of dried fish on it. The dogs howled mournfully at night, reminding us of how hungry we were. After a long day filled with many chores and no food, I was tired. I crawled into bed and fell quickly asleep. Suddenly, I was awakened by a loud yell. "Azi'i, Chia, it is cold," cried the rich man. "Fix the door." A storm had blown it open. Wind and snow were rushing in to the kunk'a. I closed the door, fixed the latch, and went back to sleep. Soon the rich man's voice woke me again. "Azi'i, Chia, close the door." A second time I fixed the latch and wearily went back to bed. But a third time the rich man's shouts woke me. "Azi'i, Chia, fix the door." I sat up and stared at the open doorway. Something was happening. This time I pulled on my boots, my parka, and my mittens, and I ran outside. I ran across the frozen lake right into the storm. I ran through the forest directly into the wind. I ran up the mountainside straight into the blowing snow. Tink, tink, tink. High up on the mountain, I heard something. At first it was faint, but it grew louder and louder as I neared the glacier. As I got closer, I saw someone. It was Foxman. He was chopping away at the glacier with his dugali. Chips of ice got caught up by the wind and carried straight down to our village. I watched in wonder, trying to decide what to do. Finally, I had an idea. Tink! I snuck up behind Foxman. He didn't see me. The clouds of snow hid my sneaking figure. Tink! He didn't hear me. The stormy wind drowned out my creeping footsteps. Tink! He did not know I was coming. He just kept chopping away at the glacier with his dugali. I crept up closer and closer until I was right behind him. He raised the dugali up over his head and then I jerked it out of his hand. Foxman went sprawling into the snow. I ran away as fast as I could. down the mountain, through the forest, across the lake, and back to the kanka. I fastened the door latch and tucked the dugali under my sleeping mat. No more wind, no more snow. Now the rich man couldn't complain anymore. Finally, I went back to sleep. But my dreams were interrupted again. Foxman was in my dreams. I ran down the mountainside, and he was the glacier blowing snow at me. I ran through the forest, and he was the trees tangling me in branches. I ran across the frozen lake, and he was the ice cracking beneath me. I awoke in a sweat to find Foxman standing beside my bed. "Please don't hurt me," I cried. He tilted his head to the side. "Chia, not zit in. You stole from me." This was true, but strangely he did not seem angry. I stammered, "You were causing the storm which was making our lives more difficult." Foxman just stared at me. "I need my dugali back." I stood up in a rush. "I'm tired and hungry, and I needed the storm to stop." Foxman turned his head toward the door and spoke softly. "I have work to do." Foxman looked me in the eye, and I realized what I had done was wrong. "I am sorry. I did steal your dugali," I said, pulling it out and handing it to him. "I was wrong." Foxman took the dugali and said, "Chinun, Chia, things will now get better for you." I watched him walk around the nakka, dragging his dugali behind him. He made a circle in the snow all the way around it and then disappeared into the night. I went inside, fastened the latch, and fell into an exhausted sleep. This time, Foxman did not chase me in my dreams. When I woke, all was quiet. The wind had stopped howling. The snow had stopped falling. The rich man was sleeping quietly. It was just as Foxman had promised. Things got better. The weather warmed up. The hunters returned with rabbit and spruce hen. The fish started biting again. We were not so hungry anymore. Our village was a happier place. Even the rich man was kinder to me. I am still Chia. I still live in the home of the rich man. But my life is better, just as Foxman promised. I have not seen Foxman since that night, but sometimes I see a faint outline of his circle around the kanka. Sometimes I think I see him in the forest, and there are times when I can almost hear his dugali chopping away at the glacier. On that night when I stole from Foxman, I learned that the elders were right when they taught us. Doing the right thing isn't always easy, but doing the right thing is always best. Dak quid yuk. And that is what happened. And then there's also a little bit of information that's included here at the end that I wanted to read you that's really wonderful about the story and the people group that it came from. It says, more about the Alaskan Dena'ina stories. It says, the Dena'ina are an Athabascan language people that, to this day, live in the southern part of Alaska, mostly around Cook Inlet. They are the only Athabascan tribe to have migrated and taken up residence at a coastal location. The Dena'ina told stories to remind or teach their children how to behave. The stories tell the history of the people and the difficulties they dealt with. They all tell something about the Dena'ina culture. The story of Chia and the Foxman is about starvation and being orphaned, common problems for the Dena'ina people. It also teaches children about the difficulty of doing the right thing. Dena'ina homes were often built on hillsides away from the shoreline. This made surprise attacks from enemies difficult, which was a constant threat for them. Orphans were common as well. Close family would take them in, or they would be adopted. If neither option was possible, a wealthy person would take them in as a servant. The chores Chia did in this story are typical of the work everyone had to do. The rich man would have taken Chia in because it was always good to have an extra pair of hands to help out. Our Uncle Walter told us that starvation, which occurred most often in the late winter or early spring, was one of the most difficult problems the Dena'ina had to deal with. Like many animals in Dena'ina stories, Foxman has special powers that enable him to do fantastical things. He is a curious and mysterious figure in Dena'ina lore. This is the only story we know about him. We use Dena'ina words where appropriate to remind us of the Dena'ina origins of this story, or Suktu. Dena'ina stories throughout time have ended with, and that is what happened. Thank you, Barbara J. and Ethan J. Otwater, Anchorage, Alaska. And this book, like I mentioned earlier, is at the Ketchikan Public Library. So our second book that we're going to be reading from Alaska Northwest Books, who once again provided generous permission to read a few of their stories in 2021, is called The Itchy Little Muskox. It is by Trisha Brown and illustrated by Deborah DeBock. And this story is quite wonderful. It has to do with muskoxen. And when I was a new college kid, I worked at the muskox farm up in Palmer, Alaska. So I really delight in this book. And there's some good information, like our last book at the end, that gives us more details about muskoxen and what's going on with them. So let's begin. This is called The Itchy Little Muskox. Once there was a little muskox with an itch he couldn't scratch. It had been a long winter, and he felt like he'd been in the same clothes for 9 months. His sloping horns were too short and too low on his head to reach his itchy back. "Good for nothing horns," he grumbled. The itch had put him in a very bad mood. The little muskox tried not to think about the itch. He tried humming, he tried running in circles. The itch only spread to his neck, to his belly, to a spot right above his nose. The woolly, scratchy itchiness was driving him wild. The little muskox knew others in the herd must be just as itchy, but they grazed and stared off across the tundra at nothing in particular. "Patience," said his mother. "Wait like the others, and it will pass." "Good for nothing patience," cried the little muskox. "I wish I was anything but a dumb old muskox." The itchy little muskox gazed at the tundra. There wasn't a tree or a rock pile or anything to rub against. So the little muskox went looking. He wandered far, and there at last was a tree, and another, and another. He rubbed his back, his sides, his cheeks, his chin, and even that spot right above his nose. It was heavenly. The little muskox rubbed against this tree and that, leaving tufts of fluffy underwool called kiviute hanging everywhere, like woolly tinsel. But now he had a new problem. Which way leads back to the herd, he wondered. He tried following the trail of kiviute, but the breeze mixed it all up. The little muskox was afraid to go too far, scared that he'd get even more lost. "Good for nothing, woolly coat," he whispered. He wished he were back with his herd, huddled in the middle of all those soft woolly bodies instead of lost and alone in these tall, scary trees. He wasn't alone for long. Along came a buffalo with big muscles and curly hair. He was so vain that he couldn't pass by a pond without staring at his reflection. The buffalo snorted with laughter when he saw the messy-looking muskox. "Hey, you with the bad hair, looks like somebody needs a trim." The little muskox stood very still and silent. Many times he'd watched adults in the herd face their challengers and hold their ground. Still, the buffalo taunted. "Careful, those droopy horns might slide right off your head." Still, the little muskox stood his ground. He heard his mother's voice in his head. "Patience, patience." Sure enough, the vain buffalo soon got bored and left to search for another pond so he could admire his curly face some more. The little muskox was relieved that he had avoided a fight. "So that's what my patience is good for," he thought. Next, he met a sleek wolf strolling through the trees. "Howdy, stranger," said the wolf, his teeth gleaming. "You're not all alone, are you?" "Yes, I am," said the little muskox. "Sir, can you show me the right way back to the tundra?" "Sure, but first, how about a little snack?" Now the little muskox was feeling nervous. "No, thanks, I'm not hungry," he said. "You don't get it," the wolf barked. "I mean, how about I have you for a snack?" Without thinking twice, the little muskox lowered his head, galloped forward, and butted that wolf right into the trees. He could hear him scrambling away through the woods, breaking branches, and whimpering like a pup. "So that's what my droopy horns are good for," he said to himself. The little muskox was happy to escape the wolf, but before long, his spirits were as droopy as his horns. If I ever make it back to my herd, I'll never complain about being itchy again, he declared. When he saw movement in the shadows of the trees, he longed for his family even more. What's out there now? He worried. Before he could hide, a strange creature stepped out from the shadows. It was a woman with shiny black hair and a gentle smile. She was following the trail of Kiviut, gathering it into her bag. Your wool is as beautiful as you are, she said, walking slowly toward the little muskox. Please let me comb you for some more Kiviut. Then I'll show you the way home. At first the little muskox was uneasy, but the woman had such a kind face, and when she pulled her comb across his back, it felt better than any of the trees that he'd rubbed against. The women in my village will be so happy to see this Kiviut, she said. First we will spin it to make yarn. Then we will knit the yarn into many scarves and tunics and hats. My people will be very warm next winter, thanks to you. The little muskox smiled, thinking about all those scarves and tunics and hats. So that's what my woolly coat is good for, he thought happily. The woman filled her bag and softly said, Kayana. The little muskox wondered why she was thanking him when he was the one who didn't itch anymore. She led him through the trees and to the edge of the woods, then pointed across the tundra. There was his herd. They were still standing around, gazing and staring off at nothing in particular. The little muskox looked out at all the patient and brave muskox in his herd, with their fierce horns and their warm, soft wool, and he was proud to be a muskox. He trotted out to join his family. So that's what my itch was good for, the little muskox thought with a smile. And then we have a couple of pages that I also wanted to read to you because it has to do with the muskox farm up in Palmer, which I mentioned earlier. I worked at for a summer while I was in college, and then also about Kiviut, if you were curious about that. So it says, musk oxen have roamed the North American tundra since prehistoric times, when mammoths and mastodons were still alive. Alaska's musk oxen were hunted to extinction by about 1865, mostly because of how they defend themselves. When a herd is in danger, the animals will gather into a line or circle facing their attacker. The adults keep the young ones safely behind them. This way of defending the herd works against natural predators such as wolves and bears, but it makes them easy targets for humans. In 1930, 34 animals were shipped from Greenland to reestablish a herd in Alaska. For 5 years, they were cared for at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. Then they were moved to Nunavak Island off Alaska's Bering Sea coast, where the herd could grow without danger from natural predators. The animals have thrived there, and some transplants from Nunavak have created other herds in Alaska. Now more than 2,000 musk oxen live in the Alaska wilderness, plus small herds can be found at special farms in Fairbanks and in Palmer, about an hour's drive north of Anchorage. Each summer, thousands of visitors come to the musk ox farm in Palmer to watch the musk ox from a safe distance. A male musk ox can weigh between 500 and 900 pounds and stand about 5 feet tall at the shoulder. Females range between 300 and 700 pounds. They eat low shrubs and small woody plants that can be found on the tundra. Both genders have horns that slope down each side of their heads. Males have a bony cap on their heads and a very thick skull. Like rams, male muskoxen battle for females by butting heads to see who is the strongest. And I can tell you, working at the muskox farm up in Palmer, that those little baby muskoxen, oh my word, there's very few baby animals that are cuter than they are. But then here's also some more information about Kiviut in the book. It says, Kiviut is considered the softest wool in the world. It is softer than the softest sweater you've ever touched. Because Kiviut is so warm and so rare, clothing knitting from Kiviut is expensive. One muskox can produce up to 6 pounds of Kiviut each year. At Alaska's nonprofit muskox farm, workers collect the naturally shed Kiviut each spring and comb the animals for more. The same happens in Fairbanks at the Large Animal Research Center, where a small herd lives. Also, some native Alaskans collect wool in the wild or comb the hide of muskox they have hunted for food. All of the kiviute comes from three sources, or comes from those three sources. It's purchased by a knitting cooperative called Umingmak, an Inupiaq Eskimo word for muskox meaning the bearded one. First, the raw kiviute is sent to a special mill to be cleaned before it is spun into yarn. Then the yarn is returned to the cooperative headquarters in Anchorage. From there, it goes out to about 200 Alaska Native knitters who are members of the cooperative. They live in remote villages all over the state. The women let the headquarters know whenever they need more yarn to knit scarves, stoles, hats, and noshocks, tube-shaped hood/scarves, and send the finished items to Anchorage, where they are once again washed, then labeled, and packaged for sale. When you choose a scarf, stole, or noshock, you can tell where it was knitted because knitters in certain villages or areas of Alaska have a specialized knitting pattern. Some have a harpoon pattern. Others look like fish bones, diamonds, or dancing people. The knitted items are sold in the cooperative Umingmak Kiviute shop in downtown Anchorage, which is open year-round, and on their webpage at www.kiviute.com. Also, Kiviute items are available at the Muskox Farm in Palmer, which opens every summer on Mother's Day when the spring calves are ready to meet their visitors. And remember those 34 muskoxen that came from Greenland in 1930? Well, you can meet more of their descendants during the summer months at the Muskox Farm in Palmer, the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and at the Alaska Zoo in Anchorage. So how delightful is that? Once again, both of these books were read with special permission from Alaska Northwest Books. They are wonderful publishers that, like many others in our country and world, have granted special permission this last COVID year for us to be able to share their stories in a limited way via social media and on the radio. So I'm really pleased that I was able to do that this evening. Because I have a little bit of extra time tonight, I wanted to share a couple of wonderful poems about spring. These are from the public domain. The first one was published in 1913 by Willa Cather, and it is called Prairie Spring. Evening and the flat land, rich and somber and always silent, the miles of fresh plowed soil, heavy and black, full of strength and harshness. The growing wheat, the growing weeds, the toiling horses, the tired men, the long empty roads, sullen fires of sunset fading, the eternal unresponsive sky. Against all this, youth, flaming like the wild roses, singing like the larks over the plowed fields, flashing like a star out of the twilight. Youth, with its insupportable sweetness, its fierce necessity, its sharp desire, singing and singing out of the lips of silence, out of the earthy dusk. And with two young ladies in my house, I certainly appreciated that description of youth and its sweetness, its insupportable sweetness. I thought that was a beautiful way of putting that. But this next poem having to do with spring is from the amazing Alfred Lord Tennyson. He lived from 1809 to 1892, and this is his poem, Early Spring. Once more the heavenly power makes all things new, and domes the red plowed hills with loving blue. The blackbirds have their wills, and throstles too. Opens a door in heaven, from skies of glass, a Jacob's ladder falls on greening grass. And o'er the mountain walls young angels pass. Before them fleets the shower, and burst the buds, and shine the level lands, and flash the floods. The stars are from their hands flung through the woods, the woods with living airs, how softly fanned, light airs from where the deep, all down the sand, is breathing in his sleep, heard by the land. O follow, leaping blood, the season's lure. O heart, look down and up, serene, secure, warm as the crocus cup, like snowdrops pure. Past, future glimpse and fade, through some slight spell, A gleam from yonder vale, some far blue fell, and sympathies, how frail, in sound and smell. Till at thy chuckled note, thou twinkling bird, the fairy fancies range, and lightly stirred, ring little bells of change from word to word. For now the heavenly power makes all things new, and thaws the cold and fills the flower with dew. The blackbirds have their wills, the poets too. That was from Alfred Lord Tennyson, and it was Early Spring. And here's one more spring poem. It's by the wonderful Robert Frost, whom I did not know until I found this poem. Actually won 4 Pulitzer Prizes in his lifetime, so that's amazing. But this is A Prayer in Spring by Robert Frost. So here's one last spring poem. It says, "Oh, give us pleasure in the flowers today, and give us not to think so far away as the uncertain harvest. Keep us here, all simply in the springing of the year. Oh, give us pleasure in the orchard white, like nothing else by day, like ghosts by night. And make us happy in the happy bees, the swarm dilating round the perfect trees. And make us happy in the darting bird that suddenly above the bees is heard, the meteor that thrusts in with needle bill, and off a blossom in mid-air stands still. For this is love, and nothing else is love, to which it is reserved for God above, to sanctify to what far ends he will, but which it only needs that we fulfill." That was A Prayer in Spring by Robert Frost. And I also found it interesting that his poetry interests started early, publishing his first poem while he was in high school. So if you know any high school students out there, or elementary or middle school students that are showing an interest in writing, do encourage it, because you never know where it might lead. Thanks for joining me this evening for Reading the Classics. I'm Rebecca. I've been your host for the evening. I also wanted to remind you of a few things that are going to be happening this week at the library. Due to COVID, we have turned to glorious social media to be able to share stories with you, and that happens every Thursday at 10:30 a.m. We have a great time for preschoolers on Facebook. It's our weekly story time. But also on Friday at 10:30, we have baby time. It's just a wonderful time for little ears. That's also posted on Facebook by Anne Marie Mersoni. Romps and Rhymes, It Happened Today. It's every Tuesday at 10:30 if you want to tune in next week. And then, of course, on Saturday on Facebook, our awesome library director, Pat Tully, she posts some of her favorite short stories. The readings last about 30 minutes or so, but they're always enjoyable times, and so she does that. Also, outreach services, that's something that I do at the library. If you are someone who's listening to this that has difficulty getting out of your home due to mobility issues or mental health issues, I would love to bring you your library materials. It's important to us that our Ketchikan Public Library is accessible to everybody, and so we are able to deliver your items to you if you have mobility or mental health issues that prevent you from coming to the library. And so give me a call at the library if that's something you would like to take part in, or if you have any questions about it, or if you are a facility that serves folks that are having difficulty with their mobility or face mental health challenges. I would love to talk to you more about that. But otherwise, I hope that you have a wonderful evening, and thanks again for joining us for Reading the Classics. You've been listening to KRBD Ketchikan.